जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी कृषि जन बल्लव गिरिवर धारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी कृषि जन बल्लव गिरिवर धारी यशोरानंदन भज जनांदन यशोरानंदन भज जनांदन जन चिरवन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी कृषि जन बल्लव गिरिवर धारी यशोरानंदन भज जनांदन जन चिरवन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी कृषि जन बल्लव गिरिवर धारी यशोरानंदन भज जनांदन जन चिरवन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी कृषि जन बल्लव गिरिवर धारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी कृषि जन बल्लव गिरिवर धारी
विष्णुपाद परमहंस सुपरिवजाकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत शिष्य महाराज दिवंग शेषी भक्ति विनांत स्वामी श्री प्रभुपाद की जय महानाथ को वैष्णवेंद्र की जय इसका फाउंडर चौबीस दिवंग श्री प्रभुपाद की जय गोल फैमिली अगौस्त शिशि गुरु गौरंगा नमो विष्णु पारायण कृष्ण पृष्ठाय वितरे श्रीमती भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी चिन्मये नमस्ते सरस्वती देव गौरवाणी प्रचारण नूर विशेष सुनि वारी पाश्चात सिटा नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So before we start into the verse today, I just want to thank Arudevu. That was pretty fired up kirtan he was leading there. Smiling for Guru Puja. So it's very nice. So today we're reading text number 5 and 6 from the 10th canto, chapter 14, Brahma's Prayers to Lord Krishna. So chant text 5 together. The word means Hira, previously Iha, in this world, Bhuman, O Almighty Lord, Bahava, me, Api, indeed, Yogina, followers of the path of yoga, taught unto you, Arpita, having offered Iha, all their endeavors, Nijikarma, by their prescribed duties, Labdhaya, which is achieved, Vibhudya, coming to understand, Bhaktya, by devotional service, Iva, indeed, Kata Upanitaya, cultivated through hearing and chanting topics about you, Upedire, they achieved by surrender, Anja, easily, Achyuta, O infallible one, tell your Gautama destination, Param Supreme. Pore habunam bhavo yoginas. Tad arpite ha nijakarma labdhaya. Vibhudya bhakchaya katopanitaya. Thank you. So, translation, I'll read the translation to 5 and 6, and there's a purport to text number 6. O Almighty Lord, in the past, many yogis in this world achieved the platform of devotional service by offering all their endeavors unto you and faithfully carrying out their prescribed duties. Through such devotional service, perfected by the process of hearing and chanting about you, they came to understand you, O infallible one, and could easily surrender to you and achieve your supreme abode. Non-devotees, however, cannot realize you in your full personal feature. Nevertheless, it may be possible for them to realize your expansion as the impersonal supreme by cultivating direct perception of the self within the heart. But they can do this only by purifying their mind and senses and all conceptions of material distinctions and all attachments to material sense objects. Only in this way will your impersonal feature manifest itself to them. Purport. It is difficult for conditioned souls to understand all the transcendental features of the Supreme Lord, as confirmed in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.11, Brahmati Paramatmati Bhagavan Iti Sabjate. The transcendental existence of God is understood progressively as the impersonal effulgence, the localized super soul in one's heart, and finally the Supreme Personality of Godhead existing in his eternal abode. Lord Krishna's transcendental existence is beyond the qualities of material nature. Thus here the Lord is referred to as Agunasya, without material qualities. Even by practicing yoga and engaging in advanced philosophical speculation, one will find it very difficult to understand clearly the transcendental existence beyond the modes of material nature. And these processes are virtually useless for understanding the Lord's own unlimited transcendental qualities, which are far beyond the impersonal conception of spiritual existence. Only by the mercy of the pure devotees of the Lord, or by associating with the Lord himself, can one begin the process of realizing the personal feature of God, a process that culminates in pure Krishna consciousness, the final and supreme perfection of knowledge. Om Gyanita Mahandasya Kananjana Shilakaya Chakshura Nivitanyana Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So there is an old adage that explains that knowledge, that experience, not knowledge, experience is the best teacher. And so in this chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, we're getting the experienced knowledge of Lord Brahma. We studied in detail about the Mohan Lila, and Lord Brahma, he learned some lessons from that. Most notably, he learned lessons about the love that exists between Supreme Lord Krishna in his personal form, his most intimate personal form, as Gopal of Vrindavan, the love between Lord Krishna and his devotees, the residents of Vrindavan. And so in this chapter, and of course we understand that's based on a tremendous experience that he had. I mean, going through the whole thing, you know, so many Vishnus manifesting, him becoming bewildered, all these things, he learned something from that. And so now he's telling us what he learned. So we're getting some realized knowledge from Lord Brahma in this chapter, particularly about the special position of Krishna in Vrindavan, Krishna and his devotees in Vrindavan. And so these first few verses of this 14th chapter, we find a discussion, a distinguishing how those on the path of Jnana and yoga, although obviously someone on those paths is praiseworthy in a sense, and not the ordinary materialist that's just interested in gross materialism. They're interested in the perfection of life, but the paths that they choose, particularly described Jnana and as referred to here, yoga, these paths are quite difficult. Keshav was explaining yesterday nicely when he was discussing the fourth verse, this idea of klesha, or difficulty. The word in the Sanskrit from text 4 is kleshala, botheration. And the verse describes how the trouble taken is like beating husk when the pad is already gone. It's just hard work. Endeavors are all you get from that path. So Jnana is compared to that. And yoga also has its difficulties. Actually, the real benefit of bhakti is that the Lord is very easily available. In these other paths, they have to search very hard to find the Lord, either by jnana or yoga, or they're searching very hard to come up with, to be in the Lord's presence. It's very, very difficult. Therefore, Bhana is recommending that bhakti yoga be undertaken. Bhakti yoga, there's a case that can be made for bhakti yoga on this idea of overcoming difficulty. It involves 1, 2, 3, 4. Five steps, and so I just want to make that case here briefly today. I'm not going to make the case. The case is already made. I'm just going to read primarily. Srila Rupa Goswami makes the case in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. There he describes 64 items of devotional service. Those 64 items of devotional service are part of sadhana bhakti, but by performing those 64 items, one can get complete realization of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And those 64 items are very easy to perform compared to jnana and yoga. Compared to jnana and yoga, those things, as I said, Keshe was describing, their fruit, the fruit of jnana and yoga, is very hard to get. But when one does get it, he doesn't get the best thing, which is the personal form of the Lord. And so, how does bhakti yoga compare to them? Well, if you look at the 64 items of devotional service described in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which Prabhupada has given us as Nectar of Devotion, you can see that the first thing is immediately we have direct access to the Lord. Of those 64 items, the first 10, they're like you know this conception of the yam and yam, So the first 10 are like Urim, things you should accept. And the second 10 are like Urim, things that you shouldn't do. So there's the do's and the don'ts in the first 20. But after the first 20, and at least I don't often get to this, that third group, the 44 that's after the first 20. But in that those 44 items of devotional service, there's a lot of interesting, very easy to perform ways of executing devotional service that are based on direct access to the Lord. Again, in karma, jnana, yoga, it's hard to have direct access to the Lord. But in bhakti, immediately there's direct access. And these 44, this group of three, there's three, first 10, second 10, and the 44. So this group of the 44, most of those deal with the deity. And so the deity offers us the opportunity to have direct access to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The deity is not different. Ache, Vishnu, Sirade, Gurushu, Mahamati, Jati, Buddhi. One should not think that the deity is not directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The deity is directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Dr. Mohan was just mentioning to you this morning, someone asked him recently, have you seen God? And his response was typical Madan Mohan response. He said, well, what do you think those people standing there are? And so the deity is not different than the Supreme Lord himself. Because we tend to take the deity for granted. We tend to think that I'm going to come to the temple and we'll have darshan. Or the deities are always there. And we don't appreciate the rarity of the experience to be in the presence of the deity, because in a temple like this, most ISKCON temples, everything almost runs like an automatic pilot or something like that. The deity is dressed very beautifully every day, and they're always there. So we think, well, I'll be able to get darshan. Well, we shouldn't think that way. We may not get darshan. Even if we endeavor very greatly, we may not get darshan. It happened to me. We were in Tirupati at the GBC meeting. We all, we were ISKCON, we had a relationship with the Tirupati management, and so special darshan was arranged. All the GBC were going. So we drove up the hill, and we were waiting, and we were going to get darshan. But then someone said to me, they tapped me on the shoulder, you have to stand over there. You don't get darshan. You wait. They went, and I had to wait. I said, me? Why do I have to wait? Why me? No, you stand there. And off they went, and there I was standing. They were getting darshan. Everybody was, everyone to a man, except for me. He was getting darshan. I came all this way, flew all the way from America. And I went to so many GBC meetings, upstairs, and sitting there. And then, I'm not getting? Correct, you're not getting, so stand there. So we shouldn't think that we can just get darshan. It's a real experience to get darshan in the Lord. Because I did get darshan. But not the type of darshan they got. They went close, all the stay went back. So why? Who knows? But the point is that we may not get darshan, even though we think it's so there. So we should appreciate how easy the Lord is making it by giving us his darshan. And the deity is very intimately related with these 44 items of devotional service that allow us direct access. We're getting the goal of being presented to us. The means and the ends are the same. The means and the ends are the same. in Bhakti Yoga. Prabhupada was asking, what do you get from chanting? What was Prabhupada's reply?
More chanting.
More chanting. So the means and the end are the same. So does with these 44 items of devotional service. And to prove the case, I just want to go over a few of them. Even I'm not so much familiar with these 44, because the first 10 and the second 10 is where we usually are caught up in our study. But there are some very interesting ideas that we can understand from some of these items. So let me just share some of them with you. And so the numbers I'm going to be counting out are not so important, but you know that they're part of the second 44. Like even if I say 17, the first one, Prashad. The 17th one of that 44 is, one must taste Maha Prashad. So we know that that's there. But Prabhupada says here, in parentheses, food from the very plate offered before the deities. Right from the deities' plate, it's saying. That kind of Mahaprasad is what you should take. Now, I think Chaturatma Prabhu would be interested in this because he has a habit, in case the Pujaris don't know, that he is secret, he likes to steal Mahaprasad right from the deity's plate. So as soon as it comes off the altar, during some festival time, watch out if he's around, because he's going to take right off the deity's plate. But that's okay, because this is a way of showing his affection for the deity. Often this question comes up about taking prasad, not taking prasad before the deity. But I was hearing His Holiness Manmadhiswami discussing this, and he was saying, yes, not that we sit down and we serve prasad and a full meal here and everything in the temple in front of the deity, but sometimes you'll see in the temple the pujari, he's giving prasadam off the altar. Now, it's not that you have to go hide, you know, like eat the prasadam, hide it from the deity or something like that. No, take the prasadam. The Lord likes to see you take it. And that's kind of the meaning of this, food from the very plate offered before the deities. But the little Mahaprasad is there, you can take it. And the Lord is happy to see you taking his prasadam. He's happy to see you taking his prasadam like that. So it's a way of reciprocating with the Lord. Directly reciprocating with the Lord, taking prasadam. There's a reference Prabhupada gives here. He says that there's a specific statement in the Padma Purana. A person who honors the prasad and regularly eats it, not exactly in front of the deity, along with the charamrita, the water offered to the lotus feet of the Lord, mixed with the seeds of the tulsi tree, immediately achieves the results of pious activities which are obtained through 10,000 performances of sacrificial rites. So just by taking the prasad, you get the benefit of the karmi that's doing these sacrificial rites, you know, 10,000 of them. Just by taking the prasad, the same benefit you're getting. So which is easier? Okay, so that's the first argument. Second one is, number 20, we must touch the lotus feet of the deity. Touching the deity. Now, in any kind of personal relationship you have with someone, there's always some pressing of the flesh, right? You know, shake hands, you embrace something, you know, there's a touching there. It's a natural thing when there's a relationship with people that you touch them. So, Krishna, in his deity form, also likes that you touch him. He likes that you touch him. It shows a relationship. The deity is not like the Queen of England. You know, the Queen of England, you can't touch the Queen of England, you know. You can't touch her, you know. But the deity is not like that. You can touch the deity, especially touching the feet of the deity. When you meditate, for instance, about the feet of the deity, if you touch the feet of the deity in a very reverential mood, desiring to please the Lord and to to submit yourself in a humble way to the Lord, to reciprocate with the Lord. That kind of touching. That kind of touching at the feet of the deity. Not just, sort of a mindless thing like fulfilling some kind of obligation. But again, it's done with the feeling and devotion. That type of touching of the deity is very pleasing to the Lord. It's a way in which he reciprocates with us. There's a further consideration of this devotional principle. It's described here in the Vishnu Dharmottara. There is a statement about touching the lotus feet of the Lord. It is said, only a person who is initiated as a Vaishnava and is executing devotional service in Krishna consciousness has the right to touch the body of the deity. When Prabhupada talks about Gandhi's political movement and hygienes, then he concludes this section by saying, but anyway, the present law is that in the scriptures, the present law is the law of all scriptures. If anyone is purified, he can enter the temple. Actually, that is the position. Anyone who is properly initiated, who is properly following the rules and regulations, can enter and touch the deity, not all. And one who touches the body of the deity, following such regular principles, is immediately delivered from the contamination of material sin, and all his desires become fulfilled without delay. So that's the value of touching the deity. We have this opportunity to become initiated and to do deity worship and touch the feet of the Lord in a service attitude. Okay, let's go to the next point. We must see the deity with great devotion. There are different ways of seeing things. One way might be just having some visions bouncing off your eyeballs. Another way may be to become very deeply absorbed. Look at the endeavor that goes behind what we see here on the altar here today. One way to see the deity with great devotion is to appreciate all the service that's gone into giving us this darshan. The outfits, the garlands, the dressing, the flower arrangements, so many things that take so long and are so, at such a great expense are prepared so that we can have a beautiful darshan. So one way of seeing the deity with great devotion is to appreciate the service of the other devotees that have done this vision. Of course, another way is also just to become absorbed in what we see today. And particularly today, I see that I think the white garlands on Krishna Balaram look very well with the whole color scheme of the altar. And so just appreciating something like that, I think it helps us to see the devotion. And devotion, of course, means love. And so we should try to love the deities. We should try to love the deities. Of course, again, the deities are not just some stone statues, they're persons. So we can develop loving feelings in our heart for the deities, become attached. Anybody from the natural, they go around the world, and someone says, what are your favorite deities? You got to say Radhisham Sundar, what does that have to do with us? You got Radhisham Sundar over here. Your favorite deity, Krishna Balaram, so. Of course, sometimes it's hard, because Krishna Balaram and Radhisham, oh my God, I loved him since the first time I saw them so many years ago. And so, it's hard to get them on their own and view Krishna Balaram here, but that's an alright kind of dilemma. It's a dilemma of love in the heart. That's the way you need to see the deity. Another one here that I particularly like here, it says, you should think of the Lord as one's friend. when you're looking at devotion as a duty, you should think of this, I have a relationship, I have a friendly relationship with Krishna. And when I'm coming to see him, I'm going to see my friend. When I have a friend that, for instance, sometimes I'm driving by Lowe's and I think, well, let me just stop in and see my friend Chaturatma. Because of the relationship, therefore I go and want to see him. That should be more with the deity. You should think, oh, I have a friend that stays here. Let me go see him. How he's doing. And what do we do with in a friendly relationship? In a friendly relationship, we express our confidential feelings. That's what a friendly relationship means. We express our confidential feelings. We should express our confidential thoughts and feelings to the deities. And therefore, we're seeing them as our friend. And it makes our life, when we see the deity, everything a completely different experience. Let me read you what is described here as an evidence of giving the deity Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu about the seeing the deity as a friend. Sometimes it is found that a pure devotee lies down in the temple of the Lord in order to serve him as a confidential friend. Such friendly behavior of a devotee may be accepted as raganuga or spontaneous. Although according to the regular principles, no one can lie down in the temple of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, this spontaneous love of Godhead may be grouped under devotional service and friendship. So it's an example given in the Shastras how a confidential friendly relationship can exist between the devotee and the deity. Number 30. One should offer a favorite article such as a food or garment. Now, this is interesting. Offering a favorite article. What does it mean? It means that we should give the best to Krishna. Again, Maharaj Swami, he gave an example here, and it happens. I'm sure most of you have this experience if you've been in India. In India, you get the notes, the rupee notes. If they get a little tattered or even torn a little bit, who's going to take that note from you? The rickshaw rider won't take it. No. Give me a good note, you know. The note becomes worthless if it's torn a little bit. So sometimes people think, he had this experience when he was a pujari in Prabhupada's rooms in Radhadhanabar. But even devotees, the Western devotees, they adopted this mentality. So when they came there wanted to give a donation, they looked in their wallet and they found the torn bill. You know, here I'm giving you this torn bill. You know, why are you giving a torn bill? It's worthless. You know no one's going to take it. But that's what you choose to give to Krishna? Some torn bill that's worthless? You know, you should take the most crisp and nice new note and give that. Give the best you have to Krishna. So whatever we all do this in different ways. When I was the president in Washington, D.C., it was the first time I'd been a temple president, and so I was quite excited when someone called up and said they wanted to donate their car to the temple. Of course. When I saw the car, I didn't understand why they were going to donate the car. It's worthless, you know. It's got three wheels. It's dented all over. But you're going to donate that to Krishna and drive off in your Mercedes or something? Come on. We have to offer the best to Krishna, not what's left over or what's the second best, something that's favored to us. Again, we would do that with a friend. We would do that with a lover. We'd give them the best. We wouldn't try to give them something that is less in any way. So, also something dear to us, and this is the principle behind giving up things. Like another principle is observe kartik. So in kartik, many devotees take vratas or vows. And so You give up something that's dear to you, not that something that it doesn't matter to you about. It doesn't matter whether I eat bitter melon, because I don't like bitter melon, so if I'm going to give it up for Kartik. That's not very pleasing to live, but when he sees you are giving up sweets, you're not going to eat sweets, then that's something. You're giving up something that's dear to you because the Lord is more dear to you, and you're trying to show that to him by doing like that. And here, just to do one more here, hopefully I've proved the case. This is 37, one should arrange one's devotional service according to one's means. And this is so nice, according to one's means. We're all individuals. And all of us want to have an individual relationship with the Lord. And that relationship turns on the basis of our individuality. And so according to our means, whatever we have at our disposal, Krishna's saying, you just approach me with that, and I'll be satisfied. Whatever talents we have, whatever money we have, whatever strengths we have, in that way, we can reciprocate with the Lord. And he likes that. He likes that. He likes us to do that. Let me just read what it says here about this. In the Padma Purana, there is a statement that one should perform the ceremonies for the Lord according to one's financial position. Everyone should observe the different ceremonies and celebrations of the Lord by all means. So, we have the means to do an elaborate function. If we do a little function, we have that showing our love and devotion for the Lord. But if we have only means to do a small function, and we do that to the best of our ability, then that will also be very pleasing to the Lord. The Lord will be satisfied in that way. So in this way, if we cultivate these 44 items, that are, as I said, really based around the deity, then that's how we're actually developing our love for Krishna. That's how we can develop our love for Krishna. And again, it's easily accessible. The deity, we have direct access to the deity. And all these activities can be performed in relation to Sri Sri Radha Shyam Sundar, Sri Sri Krishna Balaram, Sri Sri Gauranga. And if we do it, then we'll actually get feelings of love in our heart for Krishna. These things will actually develop, because that's the purpose of performing devotional service, is to develop. And these are done in the category of sadhana bhakti, or devotional service in practice. So they're not something that are beyond our stage of realization. They are meant to be part of our execution of devotional service. And Prabhupada said in the beginning, if I told you everything, you would faint. We would have fainted. But after some time, we need to start exploring these other 44 items and incorporating them into our performance of bhakti yoga so that we can love Krishna. So any comments or questions about these subject matters? Yes, Ajay.
Taking the darshan of the deity for granted. And I can think of one experience, and I'm sure there's others in our early history in ISKCON, where deities have left temples. And so what you're saying is true. We shouldn't take this for granted. Shouldn't take any of this for granted.
I don't know if we want to name it.
No. Okay. I'm not going to go there. The other question was the points you brought up, touching the deity, seems to indicate a personal deity, like a shalagram or a... I mean, it sounds very personal. I know myself, I have yet to touch the body of Radha Shyam Sundar, the lotus feet. or Gorna Thai or Krishna Bala. Mm. I mean, I've been here for, and it's my own fault.
So,
I mean, I should be banging on the door of the head pujari, begging to help dress and make offerings to the Hindu artiks. But I just, you know, I haven't had that opportunity. So I'm just wondering where that comes. I mean, as devotees who've been around for a while, should we be desiring a personal form of the Lord to perform these activities that you're saying, or should we just accept the way things are set up here in New Ramavik?
Many devotees have their own personal deities they worship. But there are also statements that Prabhupada made, I think, mainly about L.A., because L.A. was a more developed community back in the 70s, and the focus should be on the deities in the temple, not necessarily on his personal worship. But I think that both are there. And not that, you know, we got to be all over the deities every day, you know, I got to touch a deity, you know, but maybe do once a year or something. I'm going to do something on Janmashtami or other special holy day where I put myself in a position where I do get a chance to personally serve the deity or something. Then it becomes something special. The whole idea is that it's a special thing, not just that it becomes routine. Sometimes even pujaris do things in a routine way. They just do it in a routine way rather than a devotional way. So both things have to be balanced. Personal deity worship, temple deity worship.
There's some Mahaprasad nectar. In the Brahmavaivarta Purana, it states that Lord Shiva, he got some Mahaprasad of Krishna, and he squandered it and he ate it. Mm. And Parvati said, "Oh, you got some Mahaprasad of Krishna and you didn't give it to me? You didn't give me any? Then I curse that any of your food cannot be eaten by anyone, and if they eat it, they'll take birth as a dog in India. But if the Mahaprasad of Krishna is mixed with your food, then it can be taken." So she didn't appreciate that.
Okay, well, we'll have to watch out for Shiva Prasad, I guess. Time to hold something.
Well, thank you very much for the wonderful reminder of our very special relationship with the deities and how we can cultivate our Krishna consciousness in that way as given by the nectar devotion. Just to bring us, I guess, a little bit down, I hate to say down a level, but, you know, to in a very practical thing, you had mentioned taking the deities for granted and we show up and everything is beautiful and wonderful, but that's actually with great endeavor, as you were saying. Mm-hmm. We need to really appreciate the devotional service that goes into it, and the fact of the matter is the kitchen and the pujari department often struggle to have enough help to cover everything. Even though we have hundreds of Brahmins in this community, there's only a handful that are doing a lot of the day-to-day work, those, you know, offerings at odd hours and things like that. So actually, all of us as older devotees, as Brahmin-initiated devotees, should really think about if we can step up a little bit and actually, for our own benefit, as well as to be able to get the mercy and the nectar of serving the deities directly. It's actually really needed.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah, along that line, carrying that thought forward just a little bit, I do think that some thought and some practical steps also need to be put in place to guarantee that the deity worship goes on and is perpetuated generation after generation. I wonder, of those persons here in this community that do the bulk of the services, you're saying, I wonder how old are they, and how many, how old they are, what their health is, you know, because these are the things that you know, they just go. The time just passes. And if we don't have younger people showing the delegation, taking responsibility, then how is it going to perpetuate itself, you know, in the future? Because these deities are established by ISKCON temples, weren't meant to just be here for a few decades. They're meant to be permanent places of worship. And we need to think about that, I think, as a community as well, as a daily one, and also future planning. Anything else someone has? Yes, Sita.
Hare Krishna. Someone told me an incident where a devotee wrote a letter to Srila Prabhupada, and he was observing the devotees chanting japa in the temple room, and he was asking him, they're all chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and is there a difference in the benefit, and how does that work accordingly? So part of the response is that Srila Prabhupada said, it's proportion to their conscious belief is the mercy or the benefit that they receive from chanting. So if that's applicable to these other processes, then things like prasadam, it's like 10,000 sacrificial rites and touch the deity and all your desires are fulfilled. So if it is proportion to conscious acceptance or belief, then how do these numbers apply? Is that for like the pure devotee, or how does that work practically?
Well, the Krishna responds to devotees, his relationship is both his devotees in a reciprocal way. In the Bhagavad Gita explains, as they surrender to me, I reward them accordingly. So, rewarding accordingly can be understood to mean how he reciprocates with his devotees, how fully they understand his presence. And conscious awareness, conscious faith, as you're saying, yes. As our faith develops, then Krishna reciprocates us with us more. And ultimately, the most faithful person is the person that has the full darshan of the Lord. So, statements in the Shastra are not exaggeration, even if they don't apply to the experience that each and every one of us have according to our level of conscious reciprocation with the Lord. So we take the statements of the Shastra that, yes, taking prasad with the 10,000 sacrifices, we take that, and even if our taking of prasadam, two things, our taking of prasadam may not be in full consciousness or full faith, but prasadam has its own potency that can certainly make it equivalent. And if we do take prasadam with the conscious faith or developed faith, then Krishna also reciprocates with us fully in that way. So Krishna can reciprocate with us based on reciprocally, equally, or he can reciprocate with us in an exaggerated fashion, in his terms. Therefore, sometimes it's said that if we take one step towards Krishna, he takes 10 steps towards us. And so, he also sends his devotees into this world. He does things that aren't sort of quid pro quo or tit for tat in our relationship with him. And so, we should accept that as the mercy of the Lord. Even though we may not see the reciprocation of being equal to 10,000 sacrifices, we shouldn't doubt that that's possible. And we should feel ourselves sort of meek and humble that, well, I'm fallen, and therefore I'm not understanding the full reciprocation of the Lord, so let me purify myself. Rather than being in a testing mentality, well, I'm going to test this. Is this worth 10,000 sacrifices? Take a little push out. And that's Krishna will, he understands our intention like that. Does that approach an answer to your question?
Yeah, but who are these numbers and these statements, is that like it could be that much? I just, like, if I'm explaining that to someone else, I don't feel confident that I have a full understanding of who that applies to. Someone that may have no relationship or attitude of humility. It's just a new person that I'm speaking to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can understand that for me to get any benefit, I have to come with a very humble attitude and not say, oh, well, I'm going to eat this prasadam and see how it works.
Mm-hmm.
But I still don't have a grasp on it. Like,
well, I think maybe a way to approach it would be just to tell the person that it's prasadam. It's the mercy of the Lord, and the Lord's mercy is greater. He reciprocates us in a greater fashion than we can deserve or we can command from Him. So, it's the nature of mercy to be a greater response than our action. And that's the nature of interacting with the Supreme Lord. And does anybody else have something they could add to that? Cool.
Yes, in part, also, usually when scripture is written...
Can you turn on the microphone?
Oh, yeah. When scripture is written, it's written from the realization of the sadhu or rishi who's writing at that time. And generally when they're writing, they're not writing academically. So they didn't take a mathematical measurement and try to estimate. Just like if you went home to your family, for instance, or you came, better example, you came to a feast at the temple. And on that Janmashtami feast, you turned to your friend and said, oh, this is 1,000 times better than last year. It wasn't a mathematical calculation. It was an emotional calculation based on a realization how sweet the festival was this year. So these kind of exalted feelings that come out of the heart of a rishi when they're writing sastra is their, it's called an anubhav or sanchari bhav, that at that time they express something. Now, because that feeling is based in reality, the feeling itself, then the benediction which follows it, if you read this, if you take this, if you do that, you get that benefit from their mercy. Like taking darshan of the deity is the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, because if Srila Prabhupada did not come, you wouldn't have darshan. So then Srila Prabhupada giving darshan of the deity says, if you do this, then your bhakti will increase like this, this, this. So it's not really Krishna giving you the benediction at this point, because you never met him, never even met Mahaprabhu. So at this point, Srila Prabhupada is giving that benediction, oh, if you'll come to Mangalarti, if you will see the deity like this, you'll get this. Because Srila Prabhupada's feeling for Krishna is real, then it's like he has the jurisdiction at that point to make that thing actual. I guarantee you all your problems will be solved. You'll be happy and etc. like this.
Thank you. That was very nice. So I think it's 9:00 now. We should end. Going to our Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.